Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 6. In this episode, we will be talking to Cam Bostock. He gained some pretty big attention on social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram after completing the Bibbulmun track back in 2021, along with his other amazing adventures in and around Australia. Can you believe he crushed over 1,000 kilometers in just 21 days? For our American friends, that's over 620 miles. In this episode, we talk about the Bibbulmun track and why more people should check it out, what the hiking culture in Australia is like, and how much energy is actually put into being a full-time content creator. We hope you enjoy our conversation with Cam.
I have bad news, everybody. Molly just used the bathroom. And there she is. Yay! And the Oscar goes to Danny for his riveting performance in Trail Talks. Oh my God. Oh,
you're a good actor.
I know. You know what?
Did you like train at Juilliard? Or
yeah,
something?
Well, Juilliard said that I was too good and that I should go right to film in LA.
And that's why you're in Korea.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Trail Talks. We are here in episode 6. Apparently, we skipped episode 5.
I said 4 last week. It was supposed to be 5. But you know what? Everybody makes mistakes.
Everybody has those days.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Thank you, Miley Cyrus. I'm sorry. Not Miley. But yes, we are back with episode 6. Who are we interviewing today?
We are talking to Cam Bostock. He is from Australia. You might have seen his YouTube videos, his TikToks covering his 21-day trek on the Bibbulmun track, which is absolutely crazy. So impressive. We're so excited to talk to him about it. Yes, he is full-time content creating about Australia and the amazing landscape there and all the different hiking. You should definitely go check him out. He is awesome. Or just keep watching here and you can get to know him. So if you want to know what we are doing over here in Korea, you can check out our Instagram and our YouTube at Let's Trek Together.
If you want to follow us on Spotify and follow along with Trail Talks on your car rides, on your hikes, in bed when you're not doing anything lazily in the morning like Danny is, check us out there. Apple Podcasts, anywhere else you get your podcast addiction things.
Fix.
Wow. It's early for us. Anything else?
No, let's invite him on.
All right. Did you hear Molly burp? That was embarrassing.
I did burp. Sorry. It's the morning. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, legends. What's up?
How are you?
I'm really good, mate. I'm really good. How are you?
Pretty good. Did you just wake up?
I've been up for a couple of hours, but nice. Yeah, it's morning, so bright and early.
Are you an early riser?
Yeah, mostly. Generally like to see the sun rise, but some days I do indulge with a bit of a sleep in as well.
Oh yeah, I gotcha. We're definitely late risers. We have a late night work schedule here in Korea, so like you won't see us up until like 9 a.m. at least.
Right, so just on time this morning for you guys then.
Oh yeah.
Always.
So where in Australia are you calling from?
So I'm on in Albany at the moment, which is in on the south coast of Western Australia. My wife and I just recently made the move down here, at least temporarily. We are usually based up in Perth, which is the capital of Western Australia.
And how far of a drive is it between the two?
It's about 5 hours or so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What pushed you to move down to Albany?
It's just way better down here. we don't have many mountains in Western Australia, but all of our really good mountains are down here near Albany, as well as Just the hiking here is wicked, and the south coast is pretty spectacular with the landscapes. You've got all these granite rock formations along the entire south coast, and all the beaches are just world class. So just made sense. I was driving down here every week or two anyway, just because I needed my mountain fix, and we decided we'd just come down for a few months or however long we end up staying here for.
Nice, nice. So can you tell us your origin story? Can you say like maybe how you got into the outdoors and were you into the outdoors as a kid growing up in Australia?
I feel like I became really passionate about the outdoors quite late in life, but I think it probably started when I was quite young. My family did a we did a road trip around the entirety of Australia over about 13 months. So obviously a lot of exploration and a lot of outdoor stuff happened there. I was only sort of 5 or 6 years old, but I have some great memories of that, and I think that kind of stuck with me throughout my teenage years. I think probably, sort of my mid-teens, I was pretty into gaming and I was always on the computer. So I think I kind of, I fell away from that a bit. But sort of the last 5 years or so, I've realized that, yeah, the outdoors is where I'm meant to be, and it's kind of where I find peace and purpose. So I've been basically getting outside as much as possible, and hiking's been kind of the best conduit for that for me.
It's the best place to be.
What are some of, do you do anything else aside from hiking in the outdoors? Like, do you have any other outdoor hobbies?
I pretty much do everything. Hey, if it's outside, I'm into it. I do a lot of trail running, which I guess is on the same sort of line as hiking. You just get to places faster, which is what I love about it. Getting into mountain biking sort of these next few months as well. Got a few big mountain biking trails I want to hit this year, but I love fishing, I love snorkeling, I love the ocean as well, and basically anything to do with the outdoors I'm into. I'm into bouldering and rock climbing and all of the above, really. So get me
Pretty
outside
dope.
basically.
Pretty dope. Cool.
How old were you when you went on your first backpacking trip?
Ah, geez, I think probably when I was in school, we did a couple of days on the Bibbulmun Track. Maybe 3 days, probably like 30 kilometers. It was just one of those activities you do while you're at school, a school trip or whatever. So that was probably my first taste. But as I said, I was really wasn't super outdoorsy in those teenage years. So it wasn't until probably 2 years ago that I did my first kind of self-planned multi-day hike, and it was only a couple of days. So yeah, doing the bib last year was kind of a massive leap for me, but it was pretty damn epic.
Oh yeah, we'll get to it. We're excited to talk about that. So going on that first trip, do you remember like the gear you took out or the preparation you did? Is it like massively different than what you did on the bib?
Yeah, that first trip was all kind of planned for us, being a kind of school thing. So none of it was my own gear. I don't think I prepared for it. I remember it being super hard. I was unfit, and I had like a 25 kilo pack. So it was not
Nice.
great. But I do remember. I remember really enjoying it. It was a good time, and it was probably just gave me a taste of what was to come. But a lot to learn. Over the last few years, kind of doing it all myself and figuring out the best way to go about it.
There's like a whole other world of all this backpacking information and knowledge. When you open the door, it's like a flood of information. There's so much to go
Yeah,
down.
I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface. It's kind of crazy.
So what brought you out to Japan? And when did you go out to Japan?
So me and my wife lived in Japan for a while there before the COVID world began. My wife has always loved Japan. She grew up watching anime and loved the language and the culture. So it's kind of always been in the back of her head, and we decided to go over and see the country as much as we could. She was actually studying Japanese at a language school over in Tokyo. So
Cool.
she went over a little bit before I did, kind of test the waters, and absolutely loved it. And I was a bit a bit iffy about moving countries, to be honest, but yeah, eventually kind of committed, and we spent about a year there before we were kind of forced back, and it was, yeah, it was one of the best years of my life. It was
Cool.
absolutely. You guys aren't too far away from Japan, obviously, so I'm
No.
sure. I don't know if you guys have visited, but
Not allowed,
Not
but
allowed.
wish we could.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But it was spectacular. I think that's what kind of really deepened my love for hiking, was just the extent of it over there. I think Japan is something like 90% mountainous on the landmass, and it's just endless, the trails and the mountains. And there's some crazy long distance hikes over there as well that I'd love to tackle someday. But I was basically just getting out into the mountains every chance I could while I was there, and it was pretty damn cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it so Korea is also very mountainous, and you will probably find over 100+ day hikes to do in Seoul, but the trails are so crowded. Like Koreans love hiking. Is that similar? Is that similar to your Japanese hiking experience?
There was definitely the popular hikes in Tokyo, the popular kind of day hikes and mountain adventures, where all the tourists would go, a lot of the locals would go because it was easy, and those mountains specifically were very well. There's a lot of amenities. Some of them basically had towns on the top of the mountains, so they were very easy to kind of access. But I would say hiking's fairly popular. I would say it's more popular with the older generations over there. I'd often see a lot of older people on the mountains hiking up. I think the mountains are quite significant in the Japanese religions and kind of cultural history. So the older generations would hike it for those kinds of reasons, and I'd see that a lot. But I think I didn't see a lot of young hikers, especially on the more remote trails. So I was often out on the mountains alone when I was doing kind of exploration missions on random trails that are in the middle of nowhere, which I love, because I think you guys probably agree that being on a crowded trail that you have to kind of go shoulder to shoulder with people or push past people was the worst thing ever. It doesn't really hit the spot for what you're going for. So I find some great isolated kind of trails as well.
Yeah, that's definitely something we miss. When we did the Appalachian Trail back in 2020, and that was a year when there was basically no one on the trail. So going from that, where you were maybe seeing a couple people every single day, to here where it's like every 5 seconds you're passing a hiker, it's been a
Bit of a
bit of
different
like a
vibe.
culture shock. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely miss it.
How was it seeing Mount Fuji? I'm like,
Yeah, I'm
I
jealous.
want to see that mountain so badly.
Yeah, I never climbed it actually, but I definitely saw it a lot. Every decently high peak in the Tokyo region had a great view of Fuji, which is cool. Like when I climbed, started climbing the mountains and saw it was kind of surreal, because I was like, wow, I've seen so many pictures of, that skyline with Fuji just popping up there. And so it was cool seeing it. I wanted to climb it. I never really got the chance. It's a few hours away from where we were living. And we, yeah, kind of had to leave unexpectedly. But yeah, definitely cool to look at from basically wherever you were in the mountains, even around Tokyo. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is it something you want to go back and conquer one day?
Yeah, we plan to go back when we can, and definitely from all the people that I talk to, Mount Fuji is kind of a boring hike. That's what I've heard. It's better to a distance than to hike it, but it's definitely one of those bucket list things, kind of tallest in Japan. So definitely got to get back and do that for sure.
Cool. So you got kicked out of Japan, I assume, for COVID, and you went back home. What was 2020 like, and going into 2021 like?
Yeah, it was a bit of a crazy year. We actually left. We left Tokyo to come back here to Australia just to visit family for about 2 weeks, and that was March 2020, where everything kind of took off.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so we flew in to Perth and basically found out instantly that our flight home was cancelled. So we intended to go back. We had a flight booked. We had our apartment with all of our stuff still in
Oh
it.
my gosh.
And essentially, we had to quarantine, and then we were just trying to figure out when we could get back, and we never could, and we never did. So
Oh, wow.
it's kind of crazy how it worked out. We kept our apartment for about 6 months, just holding out hope that we could go back. All of our stuff was over there, and eventually kind of had to bite the bullet and get it shipped back, and that was a whole mess in itself. So 2020 was a bit of a wild ride, but I guess eventually we just settled into the fact that we would be staying here in Western Australia, which wasn't the worst thing in the world. Especially looking back now, it's been one of the best places to be, I think, during the last sort of 12 months or so. And you look at Western Australia in the map, and our single state is bigger than most countries, so we've had a lot of places to explore, even if we couldn't leave. So it's been good in that regard. But yeah, definitely a crazy time coming back. And I look back, and it was probably a great thing, because it kind of pushed me in the direction that I've been heading. Because we both lost our jobs that we were doing in Tokyo. We kind of had to come back and throw into the deep end, and just pushed me into kind of what I'm doing now, which is what I've always been passionate about. So I'm kind of grateful how it turned out, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that kind of what pushed you into wanting to do the Bibbulmun track?
I think the bib is it's always been something I wanted to do. It's just that hiking trail in WA that everyone talks about doing, but no one ever does. And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool to do. So yeah, definitely probably sort of after we settled back in, it was something that I was like, well, why not do it? If I'm gonna kind of do this full time, and I've got a lot of time, and now's the time to do it. And I've always liked challenging myself with hiking and everything that I do. So I thought I'd give it a go and do it a bit quicker than usual as well. And I had a mate that was keen. So yeah, kind of early 2021, the plans were set in place, and then sort of the next 6 months we're working towards it. And
Nice.
yeah, that's crazy.
Can you? I think the Bibbulmun track, at least for Westerners, are still pretty. It's still pretty under the radar. Can you just explain like what the Bibbulmun track is for our own listeners?
Yeah, I think globally there's so many other longer trails that potentially are a lot more popular, but the bib is pretty epic, and for us locals, obviously, it's by far the longest trail we have in the state. So it's like the peak of Western Australian hiking, I guess. And yeah, so it's about 1,000 kilometers. Don't know what that is in miles. 700 miles, 650 miles,
600 something, 600 something.
six
Yeah.
something. Yeah. It's just a tad over 1,000, which is a nice number in kilometers anyway. And yeah, it runs from capital city Perth to where I'm staying now in Albany, basically just traversing through some of the best landscapes that Western Australia has on offer. Absolutely spectacular. I think that's the beauty of through hiking, how much diversity you can get on one trail. Each day you kind of move into a new environment, and it's different and beautiful in a different way. So that's definitely a part of the bib. And yeah, it kind of follows the coast along the south coast from Albany westward, and then shoots directly north inland for the rest of the hike all the way up to Perth. And yeah, there's plenty of hills, there's forests and beach walking and hill walking. There's a bit of everything on it, and it's pretty great. There's about 50 or so sort of campsites along the track as well, so it's really accessible for those who just want to do a day or two as well, which is pretty common. And the sleeping huts, toilets and water tanks at each of those campsites. So yeah, it's pretty well maintained and well walked as well.
Is dispersed camping allowed, or do you have to camp at the huts?
In some sections, dispersed camping is allowed, but mostly no, because it's a lot of it's going through nature reserves and national parks where camping isn't allowed in general. But the campsites are sort of spaced at the very most like 25 kilometers apart, so you almost never have the need to. And the campsites have a hut you can sleep in, but also plenty of campsites as well for those who prefer camping. But yeah, they're so close together that really you don't need to kind of camp anywhere else, which is good.
The huts look absolutely
Yeah, they look
gorgeous.
so
Like
nice.
I the Appalachian Trail and East Coast United States huts and are just the
Some of them are great.
crappiest, the crappiest things. They're like a little tin can box. And I
Right.
remember we follow another couple, Lauren and Scott. They just did the Bibbulmun track, and
Yeah, I actually met them on the trail.
yeah, oh, awesome.
Oh,
And I just remember them showing the huts, and then you showing the huts, and I'm like, those things are enormous. Like,
There's
those
like
things are full-on
bunk beds
houses.
in there, like.
Yeah, definitely can fit a lot of people, and they kind of get maintained really well. There's a great and large group of volunteers that kind of maintain the track. So yeah, the huts are always in good condition and well looked after. And yeah, it's nice to get into them sort of at the end of a long day of hiking, because you got your water, you got a toilet that's usually quite clean, and yeah, the huts plenty of space to kind of spread out in as well.
That's
Yeah,
awesome.
definitely a safe haven when it rains too.
That's
For
it. Yeah,
sure.
absolutely.
Yeah. So did you carry a tent at all, or were you sleeping in the huts the whole time?
Yeah, we didn't carry a tent. Most people do, because sometimes the huts can fill up depending on how busy it is. But we were basically just traveling as light as we possibly could, so
Yeah.
we didn't bring a tent and kind of just hope for the best. But we never had a full hut, which was good. Yeah, most multi-day hikes I do, I bring my tent along. I do prefer sleeping in a tent. I think it's a bit nicer. But yeah, we'll go on for speed, for partly for this hike. So we kind of just dropped the weight and kind of made do with the bare minimum.
Yep. What time of year, or what's the season for the Bibbulmun track? Like, when do people do it?
Yeah, it's usually spring. Western Australia is known for its wildflowers. So in spring, that's kind of the most beautiful time to do it. And so we did it in the middle of spring. Definitely the most popular time as well. But people do it throughout the whole year. There's people doing it right now, which is kind of crazy because it's been very hot. But very hot and very dry, especially up near Perth. And yeah, so people do it all year round, but spring's definitely the time to do it if you want to enjoy the wildflowers and kind of all the flora's super lush and beautiful.
Yeah. It seemed like you got a lot of rain. Were you prepared for how much rain there was?
Yeah, we're expecting rain. I think the worst part for us was that the winter previously, the last few months before we hiked, was extremely wet. I think we had our wettest July in history, or in a very long time. And so that ended up flooding a lot of the southern trails. And then yeah, it did rain a bit as well while we were hiking. So between water on your feet and water from above, we got a bit wet in some of the sections. But yeah, we were mostly prepared for that, I think, with wet weather gear. But it wasn't comfortable some of the days
Yeah.
either. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know
Yeah,
that feeling.
we know what that's like.
Yeah.
So how did you and your friend Mackenzie, how did you keep each other motivated on those days where it was raining and it was just tough and you had to keep pushing?
Yeah. We both said after the hike, actually, that if we didn't have each other, we probably would have stopped at a few points. There was a stretch of sort of 3 days where it was extremely difficult. Through that flooded section on the south coast, where it was raining and it was up to our knees in water for days on end. It was horrible. And we both kind of had a few little niggles as well. I had some pretty bad blisters, some extremely bad blisters actually during those days. And when you can't get dry, you can't dry out your wounds, and you can't treat anything, and you got to put wet shoes on in the morning. It was horrible. I probably would have stopped if it wasn't. But yeah, I think our best motivation was probably just like silently motivating each other by just kind of keeping on going, keeping on tracking. We'd probably take turns leading, and we're not complainers. We don't make excuses. So we both didn't want to each other, kind of thing. So we kind of just powered on, and if the other person was moving, then you better be moving as well, because otherwise, we're going to make it to the hut that day. And it was a good dynamic. It might sound a little harsh, but we made it work, and I think yeah, motivated each other just by gritting our teeth and getting through it.
So what made you want to do it in 21 days? Yeah. What made you just like all out push for 3 weeks?
As I said earlier, I guess I just liked a bit of a challenge. Mm. And when I first started planning it, I was planning to go by myself. I just 3 weeks sounded like a doable but tough end to end. And I think the record unsupported is something like 16 days, so a little bit faster. I didn't really want to kill myself on my first time, so I thought 21 days is probably something that's going to challenge me, but something that's going to still be enjoyable. Kind of a sweet spot there. I think most people will take somewhere between sort of like 30 and 60 days, so definitely a bit faster. And I was planning to kind of record it all and share it online as well, so 3 weeks is that kind of clean number where people look at it and they're like, what the heck are you guys doing? So it was good. And then my mate Mackenzie's probably crazier than I am, so as soon as he heard that it was going to be a bit faster, he was on board to give it a go. We actually planned for 22 days when we set off, and then we cut a day off towards the end because we just wanted to clean it up and make it 3 weeks. But it was mostly just to give ourselves a little bit of a challenge. I think that we saw people that were hiking in 60 days along the track, and they'd hike for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours and then spend 8 or 9 hours sitting at the hut without reception. And I don't know what they did, but we would rather be hiking. And we did basically use all the light every day, but that's kind of how we liked it. We wanted to be moving and enjoying the track all day, every day, rather than just kind of sitting around.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, I thought you had a question.
I do have a question. Was it easier or was it harder than you thought to do in 21 days? Like by the end of day 21, were you absolutely exhausted?
It was definitely harder. Yeah, definitely harder. Mm. Funnily enough, though, it was probably the last few days that were the easiest. I think, you know, you guys would know that your body kind of adapts over a long period of time when it knows that every day you're going to be walking all day. It kind of gets up to speed, I guess, after a while. The first week was definitely the hardest for me because even though I trained a lot, I think that just walking 50 kilometers a day, every day with packs and with the heels and the wet, it just was a shock. And I think it was way harder than I thought during that first week. And then the last week probably was the opposite, and it was probably easier than I was expecting just because the body at that point had kind of adapted and was used to the demands of the day. But yeah, I had a bit of a, I think even on day one, I had a bit of a rude awakening. I was like, damn, this is going to be really, really hard. Yeah. Day one was probably one of our toughest days. It was a long, hilly day. And I was like, oh, what the flip have I just started? And because you kind of tell everyone that you're doing it and it's all online, it's like, well, I've got to keep going. But I was quietly a little bit worried. That's for sure. Yeah.
So what is the terrain like? You're saying hilly. Like, is it a lot of climbing on mountains? Is it
switchbacky,
like flat, like what kind of stuff are you going out for?
Yeah, so West Australia is pretty flat in the grand scheme of things. Is we don't have a whole lot of mountains, and the track doesn't really go up anything massive, but there's just a lot of undulating hills, especially towards Perth. There's the Darling Scarp, which is just basically a massive hilly region, and then down south along the coast it's quite hilly as well. So it's not so much going up massive hills. It's more going up and down smaller hills all day long. It's kind of the Bibbulmun track, the gist of it. So we're doing sort of like 1,000 meters of vertical gain every day on average. Some days a bit more. That's some 3,000 feet, I guess, something like that. I think it makes it a bit easier when you go on the kind of up and down all day rather than like killing yourself up one massive mountain, which is good, but it definitely added up over the course of each day. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know for us, I think the opposite, like we would, if you knew you had like one climb in the day, it was like, okay, once I'm over it, it's done. But like when you're doing that constant up and down, it can be.
Yeah, roller coasters are tough.
Taxing a little bit.
Yeah.
It's actually a section towards the middle of the track that's nicknamed the roller coaster.
Nice.
One of the worst of those kinds of sections where it was sort of pretty bigger hills and it just went up, down for sort of like 20 kilometers. Brutal.
Yeah, we got one of those too on the Appalachian Trail, so we get it.
Yeah.
They're not fun.
What was, so you had such a tight schedule, what was resupplying like? What was getting more food and, I don't know, getting into town like?
Taking a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's six or seven, I think, towns along the track that you either walk through or walk past. So for us, that meant basically on average every 3 days we hit a town, which, it was just about perfect, I think, for resupplying food. We had a couple of people drop us off pizza for lunch a couple of the days, which was good as well, especially when we got closer to Perth. But, for the most part, it was pretty straightforward. You carry sort of 3 days worth of food and then restock in the towns. And I think we had maybe two or three showers over the hike. So we're pretty gross for most of it, but sort of just ducking into caravan parks or campsites at towns did the job just for a quick cleanup. And other than that, there's not a lot of food supply along the track. So it's kind of, you got to make the most of it when you're in town. We'd usually kind of stop in at a cafe or something if we could and smash as much calories there and then head to the grocery store and stock up as well. So it worked pretty well. There's probably a couple of days where we were definitely we definitely had less calories than we needed just because we were trying to tee the line between carrying a low amount of weight and then carrying enough water. So there's a couple of days where you probably carried a bit too little food, but for the most part, we're able to kind of keep on top of our calories, which is good.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite food to bring on trail?
Probably lollies.
Nice.
It's just easy. We'd pick up a pack of lollies every town and smash those throughout each day. That did get old actually after a while. I never thought I'd say I'd get sick of lollies, but I kind of did. Having the most satisfying food was every time we hit a town was getting like fresh fruit and veg because you just don't kind of get that real freshness when you're out hiking. Obviously you can't carry it for very long, so that was probably the most satisfying. Plenty of lollies while we're hiking, I think.
I know you're only out for 3 weeks, but is there any food that you just won't touch anymore? You're just like, I don't like eating this.
I don't think it got to that point, luckily. But how long did you guys spend on the Appalachian Trail? That would have been a lot longer.
Five and a half months.
It's wow. So 2,193 miles.
I don't know what that is. Kilometers.
Which in kilometers would be.
But yeah, I just remember probably 3 months in. It was, there were like tuna packets and
ramen,
instant mashed potatoes just started tasting like absolute garbage. I was just like, this isn't it anymore.
yeah, I can imagine. 5 months, that's wild. Jeez.
Yeah.
It's a commitment. Yeah, talk about like starting and posting on social media. Like once you've committed, it's like, now I have to keep going.
Did you guys want to bail out at any point or you were kind of loving it the whole
way?
We
kind of did.
We had to. So we started March 16th of 2020. And about 2 days in, like the Appalachian Trail Conservancy sent out a letter asking all the through hikers to get off trail because that was really when COVID hit. So right. We got off, I think, after like 12 days when the first national park we were supposed to enter had closed down. Got off for 5 weeks. We're kind of forced off. And that was really hard.
But
we were able to get back on about 5 weeks later. And then That was it. We said, all right, we already got off once. There's no quitting now. Like, we're going all the way.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Yeah. The East Coast is beautiful.
Yeah, definitely a trail worth checking out.
Yeah.
Love to one day. Definitely. Goals.
Yeah. I had a question. So, you were saying about, like, calories in versus calories out kind of thing, because it is so hard when you're hiking all day to get enough food. Did you find you yourself like losing a lot of weight by the end of it? Was that something you were dealing with?
Yeah, definitely leaned up over the hike. Me and Maka took pictures like each day throughout the hike to kind of just track it. And you don't feel it each day, but when you look day one, day 21, we both lost all like 5 kilos.
Wow. Nice.
So we were eating so much food. It was ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
Especially when we're in towns, I would eat until I was almost sick because I just knew that I had to. And even with all that, we were always in a massive deficit every day. We were just putting in, you know, kind of 12 hours every single day of hiking. I don't think it's possible to eat enough food to kind of cover that. So, and especially when you're not going through the towns because we're trying to limit the weights. So we'd be in a big deficit most days. I always felt like I had kind of, most of the time I felt like I had enough calories to kind of give me the energy to keep going. I never felt sort of like weak or lacking, but obviously my body was dipping into some of the fat stores and burning through that throughout the hike as well. So yeah, definitely lost a few kgs and was nice and lean at the end of it, which was great. but yeah, I don't think it's possible to kind of eat that many calories every day, which I kind of knew, I guess, but really found out on the trail, which is fun.
It's like the one time in your life you can eat anything you want and you'll still lose weight.
That's right. Yeah, we're eating some bad food.
Yeah, same.
Like hitting our nutritional targets every day because we knew recovery was going to be key. So we hit our nutrition and then we just ate lots of crap after that. So
how would you get like enough protein to keep you going?
Yeah, so protein is obviously key. Protein and sleep were our two big targets every day. And, We actually brought like protein powder with us in bags. So we'd have a couple of bottles full of water mixed with protein every day, especially at night, just before we went to bed. So that would kind of tip us over the edge. But yeah, lots of bars, protein bars. And as I said, we're in towns just trying to get as much real protein in as possible. But I think that was probably the key to us being able to do it in that kind of time period, was just giving the bodies what they needed, the rest at night they needed, and they pulled up for us every day, which was good.
No dry scooping of protein?
We had a couple of dry scoops.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
But yeah, not super pleasant.
Yeah. Were you hungry getting off trail? Like, was it hard to go back home and not want to, like, eat everything?
Yeah, I actually put the weight on back on pretty fast, actually. So, yeah, we were just used to eating, I guess, a lot. And, you know, even after we stopped, the metabolism's still raging. So especially like kind of a week after, I was still kind of smashing the food. But I think I got back into the rhythm pretty quick. I mean, 3 weeks it's not a huge amount of time, you know, especially comparing to something like 5 months, that's wild. So we're able to get back into the rhythm pretty quick. But yeah, it's definitely took a few days to get used to again.
Absolutely.
You mentioned had dealing with a lot of blisters. Were there any other injuries that you or your friend were dealing with throughout the trail?
Yeah, we both had a few little niggles, nothing major. Mackenzie had some issues with some of his tendons in his ankles, which was probably the worst of it. On the sort of the first week where I had the really bad blisters, he had this ankle issue. And so that was, yeah, as I said, that was the toughest week, partly because of that, partly because of the wet and the terrain. Yeah, we basically, Mackenzie's a PT, so he was doing all his PT exercises and getting all this, you know, doing all the things that were necessary to kind of get his ankles back in check, and which was successful, which was good. I think it's, I didn't know how he could kind of recover from an injury while still hiking 50 Ks a day, but he somehow did. So that was good. And yeah, other than the blisters, I didn't really have anything that caused me too much grief. You know, just aches and pains like you'd expect, and a few a few inflamed tendons, I guess, on some of the bigger days, but with good rest and just managing it as well as we could, I ended the trail feeling stronger than I ever have, fitter than I ever have. My legs are in great shape, and I think I've tried to carry that on and keep that fitness since the hike, because I was like, I'm never going to be this fit again until I do this and hike. So I want to try and kind of keep that as much as I can. So it was good coming out injury free in that regard. But yeah, sort of the first week or so were pretty challenging in that regard, but kind of cleared up as we
Did
went.
you carry any ibuprofen or Tylenol on the trail? And like, did you use any of it?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Paracetamol and ibuprofen we carried, and yeah, during those that first week we popped a few pills for sure.
Vitamin I, gotta love it.
Yeah,
So
that's
how
right.
did Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, yeah, like between Mackenzie's ankle was quite painful, my blisters were quite painful, so we just to get through the day, some of the days we'd wrap them up and put a few painkillers into the belly, and it helped a bit, I guess.
I saw the KT tape wrapping around everything. That was like my go-to as well when I was hiking.
Plenty of KT tape, that's for sure.
So, how did you prepare, like leading up to this? Like, what were you doing to try and get yourself in shape, knowing you were going to be hiking so far every day?
Yeah, it's pretty much possible to prepare 50 Ks a day, I think, completely adequately without kind of committing your life to hiking every day. But for me, it was kind of just building my daily step count up over the months leading up to it. Trying to keep every day at a high amount of steps. For me, it was sort of like 25,000 every day the month before, and kind of, yeah, building that over the months leading up. And I'd do a lot of I pretty much do, I did all my hiking and all my walks every day with a weight vest on. So I had a weight vest that was going to be heavier than my pack, and everything I did that was outdoors was in that. So my body kind of got used to having a pack on the back, and yeah, I guess, it kind of got used to the amount of steps we're doing. We end up doing like 80,000 plus steps every day, so
Oh my God.
there was no way to get that in the lead up. But yeah, months and months of consistently kind of hitting that 20,000-25,000 mark, I think, was the best preparation I was going to get, especially with a heavy vest on. So that was mostly what I did. A lot of strength work as well, so kind of three or four strength sessions a week, whether that was body weight or with weights, just kind of hitting every part of the legs as much as possible, and really focusing on the same kind of recovery principles that we use on the track leading up to it as well, to kind of lead to get the body, kind of just used to what it would be doing. And we did a couple of kind of tester hikes as well. There's another longish distance trail called the Cape to Cape here in Western Australia, which is about 130 kilometers. So we did that over 2 days, and we did two kind of multi days on the Bibberman as well, where we kind of knocked out 50 to 60 Ks a day and just did a few little tastes of what we'll be doing. So put a lot of I've put a few massive days in there as well, just to kind of, I guess, kind of just prepare ourselves to what it would feel like to hike that far, even if it was only for a couple of days at a time, and just get used to kind of the sleep setup and camping and our packs as well. That was key, kind of just tuning in what we were carrying and our setups, our cooking setups even as well, because we neither of us had done anything longer than a few days before. So it was kind of imperative that we had all that practiced and locked in as well.
Wait, you did 130 kilometers in 2 days?
Yeah, we did.
Oh my God. Was
I
that
actually.
hiking like
Was that
sunrise to
running?
sunset?
So I actually we did the first day, which was about 75 Ks, and I had a little tear in my meniscus that day, so I had to bail, and I came back and did the second half a week later. But Mackenzie powered on and did, yeah, another 70 K day the next
Oh
day.
my gosh.
So it was big. That was kind of just like a separate challenge, but we knew that putting in those kind of k's would, if we could do that, then we'd be able to do 50k a day. So that was it was half running, half hiking, I guess, that one. And yeah, it was before sunrise and after sunset that we finished. So it was fun, that's for sure. And the Cape is a lot of beach hiking, so made it that much harder as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine that.
Yeah, for our American friends, 70 kilometers a day is 43 and a half miles.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So that's
a lot.
That's tough.
What's the hardest part of the day to hike for you? Is it getting up in the morning and hiking? Is it like hiking into the night, or is it like mid-afternoon?
I think probably Mackenzie probably agree the toughest part on the bib at least was the mornings. I think we slept on average like 10 hours a night, but when our alarm went off at 5 a.m., you just felt like you could sleep for 5 more hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some of the mornings of the bigger days, we had to start in the dark just to get in before it got dark. So, you know, waking up, it was quite cold, and you know what's ahead of you. That was probably the toughest, was getting going and kind of the first hour or so. Consistently, that was really, really hard. There was a couple of mornings where it was kind of, it was about 1 or 0 degrees, so really cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what that is in American language, but
it's fine.
It was cold. Yeah, the mornings were the hardest for sure. In general, I love hiking in the mornings because I'm really into the mountains, and sunrise at the top of a mountain is basically the coolest thing in the world. So usually I like the mornings, but on the track, it was really hard.
Yeah.
Talking about temperature, what was your bag rated at, and was it like a comfortable rating for when you were doing it?
Yeah, I was my bag was rated for 4 degrees Celsius. We had one night that hit zero, so that was a bad night. I didn't sleep actually much that night, it was so cold. But as I said, we were trying to just tee the line with weight to comfort ratio, and probably 18 of the 21 nights were fine in that sleeping bag, where there was a couple where the campsites were like in valleys in colder areas, and it was a bit chilly for sure. But yeah, I survived. It was fine. Like I was completely prepared to be uncomfortable for a lot of it because I knew that was just what it was going to take. So it was good. Built a bit of mental resilience, I think. And yeah, luckily most of the time got a good night's sleep. I think even if I was cold some of those nights, that I was so exhausted, my body just slept through anyway. So it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how much your body just knocks out after those days of hiking. Like, you can sleep through anything at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Australia tends to be known for its really deadly creatures. Did you see a lot of wildlife on trail? And what were you seeing the most of?
Yeah, yes. Definitely the Bib is known for seeing a lot of snakes, especially sort of spring coming into summer when we did it. And we saw a lot of snakes. especially on the south coast for us was the worst of it, and because we were hiking light, we were hiking in shorts and trail runners for a lot of it, so not very snake proof. And yeah, we saw a ton of big tiger snakes, which are they're dangerous snakes, and some of them that we saw were huge, like two plus meters. So there was some nerve-wracking days for sure. I think the worst part is you hear more snakes than you see. So just off the side of the trail, you'd hear a rustle some days every 5 minutes. And you don't know if it's a snake or a lizard or some sort of other animal, but most of the time it was probably a big snake. And we both actually stood on a snake, one each, which was not fun. They were just sort of camouflaged on the trail, I guess, and slithered away from us. So Yeah, there's definitely definitely plenty of snakes, and I think Australia's probably known for its spiders as well. And most of the spiders were probably in the huts that we encountered, so there's spiders in the corners and stuff, but not too many issues with those, luckily. It was yeah, definitely the snakes that are the more nerve-wracking creature. But in saying that, no one ever gets bitten by a snake, barely ever. I don't think I've ever heard of a Biblemann hiker getting bit by a snake ever. So it's so rare. The snakes want to leave just as much as you want to leave, and they'll be gone before you even get near them most of the time. So it was kind of cool to see them occasionally, in that regard, but they'd usually slither off and not want anything to do with you either. So I think they're definitely dangerous, but they're not a huge danger to you. So
Good, good.
yeah.
Can you explain what the inlet crossings were like that you did in the first week?
So the whole south coast of WA is full of inlets, on the track and off. There's lots of inlets, and in summer, so now, or almost all of those inlets are not broken into the sea. So there's a stretch of beach that comes between the sea and the ocean and the inlet itself. So if you were to hike the trail now, you wouldn't have to cross any inlets. You could just walk across on the sand. But as I mentioned, we had a really wet July and really wet winter, so all the inlets were well and truly broken into the ocean, and most of them quite a lot deeper than they usually would be as well. So yeah, crossing those was fun. Obviously, when you're coming into it, that we would have to, but you never really know how deep it's going to be, because most of them are quite isolated and no one's there checking the depth of them. So you kind of just show up and kind of figure out if you're going to be ankle deep or you're going to be sort of neck deep. And yeah, it was just luck of the draw, really. You tried to ask hikers what they went through, but most hikers would take the detours around the inlets. Most of the inlets had a detour that you could opt into if you wanted to. Usually that'd be, a few more kilometers, but you wouldn't have to obviously, go through crossing it. So we didn't have a good idea most of the time coming to the inlets how deep they were, and we were certain that we wanted to cross them all just to kind of get the full experience and not take the bailout option, I guess. But yeah, most of them were pretty good. I think they were all deeper than they usually are. There's one main inlet, the Wilson Inlet, that is usually the worst, and that was definitely the toughest for us. We were pretty sure we would have to swim across it when we got there, because it was flowing hard and it was deep, and there were some other people there that had just swum across because they couldn't find a way to walk across. So we kind of stripped down to our jocks and put our bags above our heads and started the trek across that one. And we kind of zigzagged all the way up the inlet and found a couple sandbars and made it across, luckily, without having to swim, which is crazy. I think we got up to about our necks at the deepest point. But yeah, they were fun experiences, and you kind of have to calculate them into your days as well, because just crossing a couple hundred meters would take, like that Wilson, that took us like 45 minutes. So it's you're not traveling very far, but it's eating up a lot of daylight. So for us, it was kind of like we had to get across at a reasonable pace, but we also, yeah, we couldn't afford to get all our stuff wet. We didn't have spare clothes or anything either, so it was like, yeah, a bit wild getting across them. But after we did them all, like, we actually enjoyed the challenge. So it was fun. It was fun to figure out a way across and have a bit of a different obstacle rather than your regular trails and hills. So it was kind of exciting, actually.
Was it cold? Was the water cold?
Yeah, mostly pretty cold. But I guess your body temperature's so high after putting in the work all day that a bit of cold water is kind of nice, and
Good on your joints.
yeah, joints and the muscles, and numbs any pains you have. So yeah, that wasn't too much of an issue.
Nice. Were the inlets affected by the tide? Like, was it something you had to hit at a certain time of day? Like, that would
Yeah.
that make it easier?
Yeah, so low tide would make the inlets much more crossable. So for the Wilson Inlet in particular, no one would ever hike over it at high tide. People would try and plan their days around going at low tide, but for us, we didn't have as much of a luxury to do that. We just got to the inlet when we got there. The Wilson Inlet, the tough one, I think we got there sort of in the middle of low and high, so it wasn't the lowest, it wasn't the highest. I think if it was much higher, we would have had to swim. But yeah, definitely affected by the tides, and definitely something people plan around.
Nice, cool. Well, do you want to jump into Australia hiking
Yes,
in
I have
general?
one more
Oh,
question.
yeah.
What was your favorite section of the Bibbulmun Track?
It's like the most asked question, and it's so hard to answer because there's so many good parts. I usually say there's a couple of foresty sections. One, the Tingle Forest, which are these giant eucalyptus trees around the town of Walpole, and then the Karri forests around the town of Pemberton. They're on the southern half of the track, but walking through those forests is just otherworldly. I think the Karri forests are in the top three or top five tallest tree species in the world, and so they're absolutely massive and just spectacular. And you don't get those kind of forests really anywhere else in Australia, and certainly not anywhere north of where they are in Western Australia. So walking through these like kind of remote trails through these just ancient old growth forests was pretty cool. I really enjoyed walking through that. So I usually say that was my favorite part, but there was obviously a lot of good bits.
Cool. So my first question going into just hiking in Australia is, what area of the country do you like hiking in the most?
Yeah, definitely the southwest of WA. I haven't done a huge amount of hiking over in the eastern states actually, because since I've been really into it, I guess COVID's been rampant and I haven't been able to travel much. But yeah, the hiking in the southwest of the country, which is where I'm living now, is just spectacular. You've got those foresty sections, and then there's a lot of really awesome coastal trails, a few multi-day hikes along the south coast as well, where you're just walking along coastline that doesn't seem real. And it's just the beaches are unbelievable, and the cliffs and the granite rocks are just next level. So that's, yeah, this kind of area where I am now, I think is my favorite. But there's lots of different environments in Australia. You go up to the far north of Western Australia, and it's all red dirt, dry, and there's not much not much plant life. And there's a lot of gorges and other kind of interesting coastal and rock formations and stuff. So that's like a whole another world hiking up there. So there's a lot of variety, but I definitely like it down here the best.
Is the hiking culture, is it big down in the Southwest, like where you're from?
Yeah, it's not huge. I think most Western Australians are more into the ocean and the trails. People love surfing, fishing, swimming, snorkeling, so that's huge here. But I think that the hiking kind of community is growing, definitely has been growing over the last couple of years, that everyone's locked in, so people are exploring more. And yeah, it's a great community. And like on the Bibb, we were hiking in peak time of the year, and we probably saw sort of like an average of five people a day. So kind of relatively busy, I guess. We'd share huts with most people most nights, and I think that in the past the Bibb hasn't been that popular. So I think it's definitely growing. But I think people in general just love the outdoors here in WA, because there's just so much to see and do, whether that's along the coast or inland. And so there's a lot of variety of kind of people's interests in the outdoors, which is great. And I've seen that more and more as I've kind of built my community up and kind of showcased what I'm doing. So it's great. It's great, yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
So, if someone was coming on a hiking vacation to Australia, what would be like the top points that you would want them to hit? Like, what would you be suggesting?
Yeah, I guess if they're into multi-day hikes, there's some brilliant ones in Tasmania. Tasmania is like a smaller island state in the southeast. That's probably one of the most well-known, well-rounded hiking areas in Australia. I haven't explored it enough, so I can't really attest to all of the hikes, but I know that would be somewhere that I would point you to go. But like as I was saying, there's such a diverse range of hiking experiences you can have here. There's a multi-day hike in the middle, the center of Australia called the Larapinta, which is all deserts and gorges. And that's like a crazy different vibe to something like the Bibbulmun, which for the most part is quite lush and going through forests and coastal areas. So, unfortunately, Australia is so massive that you'd kind of have to stick to one place unless you wanted to spend a year here. But I'm pretty biased towards Western Australia. I think there's so much to do here, especially in the southwest, that you could spend a good amount of time hiking a lot of days and experience quite a lot. We've got a few mountain ranges down in the southwest here, and then which are my favorites, and then obviously all the south coast hikes are just spectacular, and the Bibbulmun itself is pretty awesome.
Nice. Yeah. What's your favorite national park in the country?
Ah, gosh, there's a lot of national parks in Australia. I do love the Stirling Ranges National Park, which is about an hour north of me. That's kind of our main mountainous national park with all our kind of best mountain trails. And I can't really go past that because we don't have anything else like it here. So I would definitely say the Stirling Ranges, yeah.
Nice. Cool.
Where is, I keep going back to the one video and post that you did about Bluff Knoll. Like, where is that located?
Bluff Knoll, yeah. So that's the tallest mountain in the Stirling Ranges.
Okay. It looks beautiful. I want to climb it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's all the summits around that area are pretty similar. Super rugged and rocky, and there's the Stirling Ridge Walk as well, which Bluff Knoll is a part of, which is sort of a multi-day hike. Only sort of sub-alpine hike we've got in Western Australia, which along with the Bibb is probably my favorite hike in the state. It's pretty awesome. You can camp up on top of these mountains in these caves in the side of the mountain, and the weather and the views in the area are just spectacular. It's the only place that snows in the whole state as well. So like maybe twice a year, you'll see a snowfall on Bluff Knoll and that ridge. And, for West Aussies, that's like the coolest thing ever. I saw it for the first time this year, and it was awesome.
Let's jump into content creating. What tell us about the shift going from part-time to full-time content creating. When did that start?
Yeah, I guess I was in Japan. I was kind of dabbling in it, just making the odd video of the hikes I was doing, just because I like sharing what I was doing with people back home, and I really enjoy creating videos, especially. It's one of my passions I've had for a long time. So kind of taking my passion for the outdoors, my passion for creating was kind of a natural thing that I did on the side for a while. But yeah, when we came back to Western Australia and we lost our jobs, I decided that I would probably take it a bit more seriously for a while. So the second half of 2020, I kind of started ramping up what I was doing and learning more and investing a bit more into what I was doing. And then, yeah, kind of January 2021 is where I kind of said that I'm going to do this full time, and I'm not going to do anything else. I'm just going to commit. And I think you kind of have to take that step if you want to really dive into something and not have a backup plan and just do it. So I decided to do it. And yeah, 2021 was kind of a slow growth and building up my platforms and my income, trying to figure out how I was going to even make an income. And the last few months, the end of 2021 was where I could finally say that I was like actually earning a full-time income, and I was actually sustaining myself, and I was able to to go hiking and go outside and make videos and call that my job. And moving to 2022 now, it's only ramping up and opportunities are coming up here and there. And coming down south here in Albany, where everything's on my doorstep's been huge as well. So it's been a long process, but it's been really good.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
What was like your first passion? Was it like filmmaking? Was it film? Was it photography? Was it what like really got you into just creating in general?
Yeah, I think video making, I've always been kind of interested, even in those teenage years that I mentioned where I was really into video games. I like creating videos around what I was doing. So I think I always had a bit of an interest in that. And it's slowly evolved, I guess, into what I'm doing now, where I create more film time stuff on YouTube and of my adventures. And I guess it's all been self-taught and all just something that I've like kind of had an interest in, so I committed time to it, and it's grown into something that I absolutely love. And the best part for me and kind of my mission is just to share the outdoors with as many people as possible. We have a great outdoor culture here in Western Australia, but there's a lot of people as well that don't even really know what's on their doorstep, and maybe, working a sedentary job and sitting at their chair all day, and they don't know what's out there or what kind of fulfillment you can get from being in that in nature and being real, really raw and actually hiking at their own 2 feet and that kind of thing. So a lot of what I do with video is basically just to try and share that with as many people as possible, build a community around getting people outside. And that's been a huge focus for the last 6 months, is building an intentional community around it to kind of motivate people to experience something new. So it's all kind of working together, and it's been really good.
Yeah.
Nice. I was gonna say, how did you balance taking film when you were on the Bibbleman? Because I know you were doing different things for TikTok, different things for Instagram, different things for YouTube. How did you balance that with then hiking so far every day?
Yeah, that was always going to be the biggest challenge, figuring out how I was going to film it and how in depth it was going to be. I knew that my usual hiking filming style when I'm hiking is to do the classic where you set up the camera and you walk past it, and then you walk back and you pick it up. And I knew that wasn't going to happen on the bib, because adding any amount of kilometers to our already big days was not going to work. So I kind of decided going in that I would mostly just film just shots of us of walking and of major things that happened throughout the day, and not talk to the camera as much, not walk past the camera at all. And I would basically just figure out how I was gonna make it into a story afterwards. And I knew that it'd be a lot of voiceover and that kind of thing. So that was always the plan. That was always gonna be pretty rough and pretty raw, which I was okay with, because it was pretty rough and pretty raw on the trail. So try and show off that as much as possible. But yeah, I just filmed everything with my phone, so it wasn't any kind of extra equipment. I started the hike with my drone actually as well, because I knew I wanted to get some drone shots. But after about 3 or 4 days, I ditched the drone because we never had time to sit down and put it up, and the extra couple of kilos were just not worth it. So yeah, it was all with my phone. And like you say, I enjoy posting on TikTok and Instagram just as much as YouTube. So filming the vertical content went hand in hand. I'd film a clip with my phone this way, landscape, and I'd do the exact same thing that way, and just do that way, because I knew that after we finished the track, I'd be grateful that I had all this footage to work with. And the videos did really well on TikTok actually, so I was super glad that I filmed all that.
What's the hardest platform to create for, in your opinion, for you?
I guess it's really hard to create for multi-platform in general, just for the fact that everything's in different aspect ratios. But I think it is probably hardest for me on YouTube, because I would say it's the most effort and also the hardest to grow on YouTube. If you look at platforms like TikTok, where there's a lot of organic growth, and it's really quite simple to reach a large audience if you kind of create enough content, and it's short form, so it doesn't take as long. Whereas YouTube, so many more hours go into creating YouTube content, and it's a lot harder, I think, to kind of reach a large audience on there, because it's such a built-in and an older platform that the audiences on there are already watching what they want to watch. So reaching new people is pretty tough. But I enjoy YouTube the most. I enjoy the longer form video. So I'm willing to put in those extra hours and the extra time to kind of create that stuff, just because I enjoy that more. And even if I gain more of value out of Instagram and TikTok, YouTube is a lot of fun for me. So I'll keep smashing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you used your phone on the bib, but now, like, with the other stuff that you're doing, what are you using to film those?
Yeah, so most like shorter hikes, I'll use my big mirrorless camera. So I just recently hiked 2 days on the Haykia Trail on the south coast near where I am. And I brought like a 10 kilogram camera set up on that, just the whole shebang. So I got a drone as well. Recently got the Mavic 3, DJI Mavic 3. Just came out, just brilliant. Such a good drone. So I've kind of slowly invested into more gear over the last year or so, just knowing that this is what I'm committing to and what I'm doing. I want to try and up the quality as much as I can. And so I've got a Nikon Z6 Mark II as my camera, and then the Mavic 3 is my drone. And I still use my phone for a lot of my stuff, especially on Insta and TikTok and stuff, just because it's super convenient. And phones these days are pretty good quality.
Amazing.
And I use now is a couple of years old, and it's great. It does the job. So for a lot of stuff, I'll use that as well.
Are you afraid of bringing a lot of that expensive gear like out into the outdoors? Like, are you afraid of breaking it or having to repair anything?
No, I'm not. I bought it with the specific purpose to take it into the outdoors and get it wet and get it broken if it has to. My camera is broken at the moment. I like crushed one of the lenses, but it still
nice.
Still kind of works. So I just, I deal with it. But that's, as you guys know, you can get pretty rough when you're out in the outdoors, and you just got to expect things to break and things to get dirty and wet. So I'm fully okay with that. It definitely happens pretty often.
Yeah.
When you're using your drone, like, I know, like, national parks in the U.S., it's not allowed. Like, you're not allowed to film with them. Are you allowed to with the national parks in Australia?
Yeah, it's pretty, it varies widely. Some national parks are okay with it. Some you'll need to get permits to fly there, or permission from whatever governing body is over that area. But for the most part, it's pretty relaxed here. In general, as long as you're not sort of flying close to people or close to wildlife and not disturbing anything, then it's okay for the most part. But there are certain national parks, and obviously when you're in civilization where there is restrictions, I think for the most part you're pretty relaxed in what you do, as long as you got your registered drone and whatnot.
Okay, cool, nice.
Is there anything you want to ask? Or can
Tell us about the interactive map that you've been creating. Like, what was that project like? When did you come up with the idea? Tell us about it.
Yeah. So I one of my income streams is through Patreon, which is, if people don't know what Patreon is, it's just a way people can support creators, and, creators can offer rewards, I guess, whatever they choose. And one of the things I've been thinking about for ages was creating sort of this interactive map where I could show off a lot of the locations around WA that I've explored and created videos about. And I obviously get, hundreds of questions about where people should go, or where they should go on this road trip, or where I should hike. And I thought it was a good opportunity to kind of give back to my Patreon community and create this map. So it's been something I've been working on over the last few months. And yeah, it's been cool. A lot of people in my Patreon community have already been out exploring and finding new spots. So it's been quite successful so far as well. And I've grown the community a bit since launching it, which is awesome. But I don't know. I guess when I was first getting into this, I always found it really hard to find new spots. Like everything wasn't all in one spot, so you'd be Googling for hours and then trying to piece together lots of things. Whereas yeah, it's basically a way I can kind of share at least the things that I've done. So not everything's on there, but if I've done it and I think it's awesome, then it's like a pin on the map, and you can kind of zoom around and see everything that's in the same area. And people can plan out trips or adventures and explore for themselves. So yeah, it's a cool little project that it's been
Yeah.
really fun.
What's been the hardest part about it? Has it been like actually tracking? Has it been like what's the
Inputting.
process for making an interactive map like?
Yeah, it's just a lot of, I guess, a lot of man hours putting in all the relevant information, because I do it by hand. Basically every week I'll put a new update out onto it with how many new spots. And I guess, yeah, it just takes some time. That's probably the hardest bit. It's pretty basic. I use a mapping software called MapHub, which kind of has the platform for you, and then I share the link off that. So I've got the base that's built already, and it's just about putting in all the information and really trying to include as much information as I can for the people that look at it, so they can kind of plan for anything, whether that's potential dangers or hazards or anything else they need to think about. So yeah, it's just take some time, I guess. So
Yeah.
that's why
Yeah.
not put everything out in one go, because it'll most likely take me a year to put that together. I'm kind of just like putting out an update every week of, completing certain national parks or certain areas of the map, and it'll slowly build out to something huge, which should be good.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Tell us about Rapids Trail Club. That's really cool. Did you start that?
Yep. Rapids Trail Club is my baby that I started probably about 6 or 7 months ago. Yeah, it kind of started as I had a small group of friends that I was taking out every week, or we kind of just, I guess, got together and went for a hike every week, just as a way to explore new places. There's a specific regional park in Perth near where I used to live that I absolutely love and would take people there to regularly. And one day I decided that I would, I don't know, I guess just open it up to the public and create a bit of a club around it. So I started Rapids Trail Club, named after Bell's Rapids, which is where we kind of started, and then now is our home base. And yeah, I guess I posted a TikTok about the fact that I was starting it, and it went viral. So the club kind of just boomed in popularity overnight, which was crazy. I think the first hike we did, we had about 8 people come along, and then I posted a TikTok, and then we had about 70 people come along. So
Wow.
it was
That's
pretty wild.
awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. A bit overwhelming, because I was like, crap, now I'm responsible for a bunch of people. So yeah, luckily I have a group of volunteers and other people that kind of help me run the hikes. But yeah, last 6 months we're kind of doing every week or two. We'd choose a day on the weekend and go hike a new trail with a big group, and just get people out into nature and build a bit of a community around it, which, as I said earlier, has kind of been a focus for me, just building community around what I'm doing. So we had so many people every week say that they'd never hiked before, or they had no idea that this trail was 5 minutes from their house, that kind of thing, which is just exactly what I was wanting. And built a really good vibe around it. And coming into this year, moving away from Perth where we're based, I've moved the hikes to sort of like monthly hikes. So we've done one, we did one in January. It's still January. Yeah, we did one this month. I lose track of time sometimes, hey?
Yeah, me too.
One
We're
month,
almost from February.
kind of moved to monthly hikes this year, and do a couple down here in Albany as well. So maybe one in Perth, one in Albany a month. We'll see how we go. But Yeah, super fun. Absolutely love it. It's my favorite part of the week that I host the hikes on, just meeting new people and getting out into nature with a bunch of kind of like-minded individuals. It's really cool.
Hiking is one thing. I see that you also do like trail runs. How is it trail running with a group of people?
Yeah, so we've done a few trail runs, usually a much smaller group, sort of like 2 to 10 people, I guess, where we just choose routes. I've been mostly leaning towards hiking lately because I guess that's the most accessible for the most people. So with trail runs, obviously not everyone can run for an hour or 2 hours, and so a lot of people get excluded. So I do the occasional run. We do like other kind of hill sessions as well occasionally on top of the hikes. Yeah, obviously I love trail running as well, so we do a few kind of group runs alongside the hikes, which is a lot of fun, but it's a bit of a different vibe.
Do you have any plans to go to expand out of Southwest Australia, or are you trying to like stay local?
Yeah, I think at least for now we'll stay local, but who knows what could happen down the line. With COVID and the travel situation, it's pretty much locked in here anyway for now. So we'll see how we go when things open up. Me and my wife want to travel a lot around the world when it becomes viable. So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens down the line.
Nice, nice, cool.
So what's next? Like, what is your next big hike or plan or project that you're working on currently?
Yeah. So my next big trail will be the Mundubiti, which is actually a mountain biking trail, and it also runs from Perth to Albany via a different route, but it's about 1,000 kilometers as well. So I've actually never mountain biked in my life. I've never owned a bike, and I still don't. But in a few months, I will be riding 1,000 kilometers. So looking forward to that. I've actually got some sponsors jump on board, so I'm getting a bike sent over, which is great, and all my gear. And as soon as that comes, which should be in the next few weeks, I will be doing a lot of riding and learning how to ride, and then yeah, tackling the Mundubiti. So similar kind of vibe to the bib, where it goes through a few towns. There's a few huts spaced along the track. Obviously, a lot less common, the huts, because you'd be riding longer distances. But yeah, the goal is to try to challenge myself again, do a sort of a 5 day or so end to end on the Mundubiti. And yeah, that's kind of my big goal for the year, and we'll see what happens after that, I guess. But if we can travel well, there's a lot of other through hikes in Australia that I'd love to have a go at.
I'm sorry, I'm being a dumb American and I'm converting kilometers to miles. But you're doing it in 5 days, you said?
That'd be the goal. Yeah, we'll see how we go.
Wow. Nice, nice.
I know nothing about biking, so
That's a lot. That's still a
that
lot.
seems like a
That's a
lot.
lot.
Yeah, it should be similar to the bib, sort of like 12 hours each day, I think. But I don't really have much knowledge about bikes or how fast I'll be able to go either. I know the track it's a mountain biking track, so there's a lot of hectic trail, but also a lot of rideable trail where you can kind of get some speed. So it'll be a process. I'm in the early planning stages at the moment, and when I get the bike, I'll kind of see what's up.
Yeah,
Absolutely. Have fun with that. That's
that's
cool.
really cool. Well,
We wrote any goals to travel outside the country,
Like, where would be the
yeah.
places that you would want to go when things open up?
Yeah, I've got a very long list of places. I think that when we can freely move around, we'll permanently be traveling, I think, around the world. There's so much that we want to see. The main place we want to go is back to Japan, I think, because we kind of have a lot of unfinished business there, I guess. My wife was in the middle of her studies, and I was in the middle of exploring, so I think we'll go back to Japan when we can. And from there's a lot I want to do. South Korea is one of the top on our list, actually. So maybe we can say hi to you guys if you're around there still. And
We're leaving in a month.
We're leaving in a month. We're heading back to the States and jumping on the Pacific Crest Trail.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Yeah, well,
Yep.
I want to do the big three in America at some point over my lifetime. I'm not sure where I'd start, but the PCT looks amazing, so probably there
Yeah.
at that point as well. But obviously there's a bunch of wicked trails across Europe, and the TA in New Zealand would be really cool. So yes, there's a lot on the horizon, but I think we'll most likely go and live in Japan again for a while and base ourselves there and figure out what we want to do from there. I think my goal at the moment is to, at least during this COVID season, was just kind of build up a platform based in Western Australia and kind of build a steady income that when we can launch out, we can kind of go out and do what we want to freely. So that's still the mission at the moment. But yeah, I've got a list and a notes app. On a notes app that's very long of things I want to go do and see. So hopefully getting those off sooner rather than later.
Well, if you do end up in South Korea, we can suggest a lot of hikes.
Perfect.
We've explored a lot, so.
Awesome. Yeah.
So in conclusion, what do you hope that your audience or your followers can take away from the content that you create and the videos you make?
Yeah, I guess like I was saying, I just aim to get people out there, especially people that may not know what's out there and may not know what it feels like to be out there. Because I think a lot of people, the outdoors is quite daunting to a lot of people, and maybe people don't think that they're capable of doing certain things. And yeah, I kind of aim to inspire people to just dip their toes, whether that's hiking or whatever else, and just get a taste, and you're gonna love it. So hopefully it leads to somewhere from there. But yeah, I want to get people off the couch and into nature. That's the mission.
Nice. Cool.
Awesome.
What advice do you have for future adventurers or future hikers?
I guess something for me, which is something that I always wish that I did earlier, was just to start early, even if it's re really small, and stay consistent. This is a big thing for me with fitness, because I'm really into, like you guys have probably guessed, like challenging myself on the hikes that I do, and it requires a lot of fitness, and especially these long distance things. You benefit a lot from many years of consistent training, and I just wish that I started earlier. And so I tell that to a lot of younger guys that I meet, start now. Even if it's walking around your neighborhood, start being consistent in what you want to do in the future, and you'll thank yourself when you're in your 20s and 30s, because you've got such a good base to kind of go out and literally do whatever you want to do. Even if that's not anything crazy, you'll have kind of this base for adventure that can take you a lot of places. So yeah, start early and be consistent, and work towards what you want to do. Nice.
Nice. What advice do you have for yourself who is like still on trails, whatever, like not to take for granted or things to keep in mind when you're hiking?
Yeah, I think, like I said earlier, I find a real peace when I'm out on the trails, and I find the opposite when I'm inside a house on my laptop or on my computer or on my phone or whatever. And sometimes it's pretty easy to bring that out into the trails, whether that's your phone or even just thinking about the stresses that come with technology and everything else. And so I think that when I'm hiking, I really try and make a focus on really taking in the experience and what it is. And I found that on the bib a lot, that we had so much time to think being out there all day, every day. And you end up thinking about everything that you can think about, and then you have just an empty mind. And that's when it was like, wow, this is just surreal. I'm not thinking about anything else except doing what I'm doing right now and being in such a raw state. And that's pretty surreal feeling. You guys, I'm sure, can relate to that. So for me, that's something that I try to focus on every time I'm hiking. And I do a lot of hiking and a lot of trail runs where I don't film anything, because I really want to keep kind of hold of that. because I do, a lot of the big stuff I do, I want to share. So I've always got a camera or a phone around me, but getting out and doing stuff that, with nothing else to kind of think about or worry about is pretty special. So, yeah, I keep trying to focus on that.
Awesome. Nice. That was really well said. Is there anything you want to let the your outdoor community or our Thru Hiking World or anything, anything you would like for them to know or how people can keep up with your adventures?
Final thoughts.
Yeah, well, I post a lot pretty much every day on social media. So if you're interested in the Australian wilderness and what we get up to over here, feel free to follow along. And this year's going to be a year and better for me. So I'm really looking forward to a lot of stuff that I've got in store behind the scenes and with new endeavors. So follow along at Cam Bostock, which is pretty much what I'm called on every single platform. And I'm on most platforms.
Nice.
Awesome.
We're excited to see what you're going to be up to.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Really appreciate taking the time to talk to us. Good luck in all your upcoming adventures.
Have fun with your new bike.
Yeah. Can't wait to see that trip.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys crush the PCT as well. That's very exciting. Probably make me a little jealous, but excited to follow along, and I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you later. Bye.
See ya.
Did you all enjoy the conversations with Cam? If you want to follow along with his adventures, head over to his Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, which are at Cam Bostock. If you want to join in on future live chats, you can head over to our Instagram, which is at Let's Trek Together. We go live once a week, usually on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to get in contact with us, feel free to DM us on Instagram or send an email to letstrektogether@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you gave us a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you consume this episode. Until next time, guys,
let's trek together.